Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. President Trump apparently just releasing a statement. We'll get you the latest on that coming up. This, of course, follows the insurgency, the mob attack on the U.S. Capitol. Simone Weffer is a professor at Northern Illinois University, talking about protests and all of that in the history of the United States. Simone, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having me. So excited. Grew up in Chicago, so listened to you guys for a long time.
Well, I love to hear things like that. Tell me how what happened yesterday fits into American history.
Well, I mean, the short answer is it's an anomaly. That's really the first time that we've ever seen a president rile up their supporters and then have the Capitol breached. Historically, the only other time that the Capitol has been destroyed in that manner, or coming close to that manner, was in 1814 during the War of 1812. The Confederacy got within 6 miles of the Capitol. And then, of course, the threat during 9/11. But that's really a first. Now, we saw similar things during Reconstruction in the South when African Americans gained their freedom and got the right to vote, that governors and other politicians would rile up Southerners and literally had them chase out African Americans that had been duly elected to their state houses. So that's the closest in American history.
You know,
obviously, we've seen similar things globally. So, you know, this is something that's very rare.
You know, I'm struggling with the gravity of this, and I think, you know, the desecration that happened and all, but I think a lot of people don't take this as seriously maybe as we should, that it wasn't organized, as a bunch of people that people might make fun of for believing what they believe, and it wasn't as grave as some people are reporting it. So considering that scale, talk to me about the gravity of it, because I think it was very, historically incredibly significant. I think it was grave, but, you know, there is that balance, because I think people look at these guys as some knuckleheads, too.
Well, they might be knuckleheads, but they forced their way into one of the most crucial parts of our government. There are three branches of the federal government, the executive, legislative, and judicial. Much of the way the world works for us in the United States runs based on legislation created by our Congress. And so the idea that they could gain such easy access when Congress was in session is really the thing that should shake us all to the core. Because what if these weren't just a few knuckleheads? And I don't think they were. There was clear coordination. They had been planning this for weeks. It's not like this was a spur-of-the-moment thing. And it had been building essentially since before the election when President Trump signaled to the Proud Boys during the debate. A few weeks ago we saw the Proud Boys in D.C. as well, and I suspect that was kind of a dry run. And you know, they weren't really policed very hard, and we saw them vandalize some African-American churches and beat up bystanders. So we should take it as very serious in terms of thinking, how is our democracy so vulnerable?
Well, you know, in a way, I regret asking the question because I don't mean to imply that it wasn't serious. I certainly believe that it was. And you're right about the vulnerability of the building. I mean, because we did know that these guys were coming, that these protesters, these rioters were coming. Even if we didn't know they were rioters at the time, it was well planned out. And the president, you know, stood at on stage and said, oh, march up the hill, go to the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's pretty shocking. And the head of Capitol Police resigned today, which, you know, is no surprise. But you're right. It did show great vulnerability. And, you know, what struck me too, Simone, was that it showed people could literally scale the outdoor walls. They just climbed up like they were Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know what amazed me is a few summers ago, we took our kids, drove to D.C. to do the sites. And, you know, it's not easy to get into the Capitol. You know, you have to schedule a tour. And certainly since 9/11, I had spent some time in D.C. during college as a White House intern. And so I had been there in the 90s, and it was stark, the contrast in terms of security and accessibility just on an average summer day that we went. And so that's what was even more shocking to me.
All right, so talk to me about how you could be a protester at a rally and then get so riled up that you become a rioter down the street. Now, I take your point that maybe some of these were going to be rioters all along. They certainly had incendiary devices. They had chemical devices on them. So they probably did plan for trouble all along. But then maybe it's a core of people. How does that spread out into the greater crowd?
Well, I think the important thing to understand is that when we're talking about crowd behavior, of mass behavior, collective behavior, it's a really thin line, that line between peaceful protests and violent protests and then riots. And we saw that progression yesterday. You know, these folks, men and women, yes, they got riled up by the president and his words, but that was a peaceful protest. That was First Amendment rights. And when they marched from the White House towards the Capitol, also First Amendment peaceful protests. When they got to the Capitol, things changed and the tenor changed. And there were certainly some folks with bad motives, ill intentions that were part of that group. But for many of them, they were so worked up in such a frenzy from social media, from the president's words, from QAnon, from senators like Hawley and Cruz and on and on and on for the past several weeks, that it doesn't take much for an individual of, a sideway glance from an officer, a push from another marcher that lands them into a railing. All of a sudden, the mood and temperament can change. And when I teach at NIU, I talk about, it's the same dynamic that we have as a crowd as fans, right? So when I'm watching my Cubs and something's going well, you can feel the energy. Mm-hmm. When you're at Soldier Field and things go badly, you can feel the change in the energy in that dynamic. And it's the social psychology of being in a large group. And of course, in sports, it can change on a dime. And in these large protests where you're talking about thousands of people, it can change on a dime as well.
Simone Weffer is a professor of sociology at Northern Illinois University. We've got 30 seconds left, Simone. What's the future of the Republican Party?
That's a great question. You know, I see more splintering today than I saw during the Tea Party, when we see 120-plus votes in the House to sustain the challenges to Pennsylvania and Arizona. It tells you that it's a fractured party. They're going to have to do some soul-searching. But it's very hard to have a third party. It's almost impossible. Just the money alone would be difficult. But with someone like Trump, who seems to have a cult of personality and is almost a social movement unto himself, and who could possibly raise the money and help raise the money to sustain challenges across 20, 30, 40 states, who knows? I mean, it's been a long time since the Bull Moose Party of Teddy Roosevelt. And that was the last time we had a sustained political party, and that eventually failed.
Simone Weffer. I've got to run. Listen, thank you very much for joining us. I'm sorry to cut you short there. I appreciate your insight.
No problem. Thank you so much.